time to get our local view. And we do have an interesting array of topics to hit on. Find his work on the front page of the Register Guard sports section. You can catch up online, registerguard.com. You could follow along on Twitter. The handle is at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are you on this Tuesday?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. I'm fired up. We got a lot to talk about today.
We sure do. You know, you'd think covering sports in this town, we'd be primarily focused on the Pac-12 opener, and then the past 2.5 days happened. So I want to get to what you wrote about yesterday, kind of set the table. So you were in New Orleans for work. You observed a panel discussion, and it was the kind of stick to sports mentality. So I'm just curious, kind of, what was the scene, who was involved, and what kind of an audience were they addressing?
Well, this was over the summer at the APSE conference in New Orleans, which is the big sports media conference that happens every summer. The panel discussion, the one people probably would have heard of, Dan Wetzel was on the panel, who's sure. A guy that I've admired forever. I think he's probably one of the top five sports columnists working right now. So somebody I really admire. And it was a really interesting panel. It was very timely and appropriate because the subject was sticking to sports, which is something that I think all of us in this industry have probably heard. I'm sure you hear that from time to time.
Sure.
I get it too.
Yeah.
And it was a very timely topic.
And along those lines, and I get at times, like you wrote, people tune in, read a column, and might just want to hear about the offensive line. But considering that list, be it from Jesse Owens in Munich, Billie Jean King, to see what we see across sports right now, which, by the way, also includes J.J. Watt raising $37 million to help hurricane victims. If history is a teacher, isn't it also kind of naive to think the crossover into politics and social issues should or will ever change?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I wrote that column on Monday about the national anthem and the players kneeling. And, you know, it was a topic that I hadn't written a lot about just because we don't have an NFL team in Eugene. It wasn't something that was local to us. But I think what happened on Sunday was so significant that all of a sudden it became something that was relevant to every sports fan, no matter where you are. That hit home for you. And I wanted to write that column, I think, specifically to the person who says, all I want to do on a Sunday afternoon is sit on the couch and crack a beer and watch the football game. I don't want to have to deal with these social issues being injected into sports. I totally sympathize with that urge. Look, we all want to get away. I want to break from it, too. It's exhausting. All the stuff that's happening in our world is totally exhausting. But I do think, to use your word, it is naive to think that sports is that space which is totally disconnected from the culture around it. It's never been that way. Sports have always been connected to the culture, have always reflected what's happening in society. And I think sports are at their most powerful when athletes are using the platform that they have to speak about social issues. So I understand the people who don't want to be confronted with that on a Sunday afternoon while they're watching the NFL, but I guess what I would say is, if that's you, you know, you can go play Madden. You know, you can play a video game if you want football players to be robots with no thoughts or emotions. But if you want to watch a sporting event that involves real people, then you got to be able to take those people on their terms.
Well put. Continue with Austin Meek, the Register Guard, moving to the breaking college basketball scandal. Coaches to in this conference, agents, sneaker companies, nothing like bribery, wire fraud. So while I get in the moment, some might be taken aback, but from stories about the AAU to recruiting eighth graders with talent, one and done players in school for 5 months, how naive do you have to be to actually be completely shocked by any of this?
Well, nobody who's been around college basketball should be surprised by the allegations, but the fact that you have four assistant coaches arrested on federal charges. Now, that part of it is something new. I think we've all known that there were shady things going on in the background of college basketball, and that if you put any major college basketball program under the microscope, and I'll include Oregon and anybody else, if you put any major college basketball program under the microscope, you're going to find some dirt. You know, it's funny. When I got started in this business, I was covering Kansas State, and Kansas State had a player by the name of Michael Beasley,
yep,
who would be drafted number 2 overall in the NBA draft. And from the time he set foot on campus, his AAU coach, Curtis Malone, was never out of eyesight. Anywhere Michael Beasley went, his AAU coach went. And the other guy who was in the equation was the agent. And it would come out later that there was a relationship between the agent and the AAU coach steering Michael Beasley to the agent. It, you know, it's all come out in court documents since then because there were lawsuits and stuff. Interestingly, Lamont Evans, one of the assistant coaches who was arrested today,
yeah,
was on the staff at Kansas, yep, State while that was all happening. So suffice it to say, this stuff has been going on forever in college basketball. We've all known about it, but to have it spelled out this way is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, not to mention it's not an NCAA investigation. It's those federal guys.
Yeah, it's a little different when you got the FBI in the picture as opposed to the NCAA.
You know, I thought your first tweet was spot on when the U.S. attorney from New York, Jun Kim, made the announcement, then said this is an ongoing investigation. I mean, how big a shot is that fired across the bow? Or as you put it, how many basketball coaches right now should be really, really nervous about what looms? Because this... correct me if I'm wrong, this seems like it's got a bigger feel to it than what we know just now.
Oh, absolutely. If the feds are at the point where they are making arrests, then they have a case. And it goes deeper than just what has been publicly revealed at this point. So to answer your question, how many college basketball coaches are nervous right now? All of them. There's nobody who's not. Even the ones who haven't done anything wrong are probably thinking, boy, what could they find if they dug into our program? I'm really interested to see how deep this goes. I mean, even the FBI probably does not have the resources to root out all the corruption in college basketball, but I imagine coaching staffs across the country are looking at this and thinking, are we next? In the course of investigating these guys, did they find something on us? Because coaches all recruit the same guys. Now, this guy from Louisville, who allegedly was steered there by a donation from a sneaker guy, Oregon was recruiting that guy too. You know, I mean, it's all interconnected, and everybody, I'm sure, has been rocked by this.
Yeah, I just have this vision of staffs having meetings but going outside, and like when they're the shortstop, second baseman, and pitcher meet on the mound, covering up their mouths. So
yeah,
to kind of
probably a few coaches looking around the room and thinking, okay, is this bugged? Can I talk on this phone? Yeah, you got to be some guys who are real nervous.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's get to some Oregon football. And like the intro, paying homage to the late, great Rod Serling. But while the hashtag has an element of tongue-in-cheek, that Pac-12 after dark is definitely a thing. But the Ducks losing at Tempe, it seemed like the 3-0 non-conference schedule maybe brought more questions than answers to the surface. So safe to say we mostly got hints those first three games, and I guess the important answers are still forming.
Yeah, you know, I wrote about this before the Arizona State game, how when you look back on Oregon's non-conference schedule, it really wasn't a very good indication of what the Ducks actually are going to be. The teams they played, Nebraska, we've seen, is not very good. Wyoming, despite having this quarterback that everybody was oohing and awing over, Wyoming's not very good. Not only are they not very good, but the style of football they play is really different from the style of football that you see in the Pac-12. Arizona State was really the first team Oregon played who was going to attack them in that way, with quarterback running game and spreading the field and trying to go fast. that's what Oregon is going to see most weeks in the Pac-12, and they hadn't seen it until Arizona State. And so I think what we saw was a reflection of that, that I think some people maybe got ahead of themselves a little bit on Oregon because of the non-conference schedule, because it wasn't quite as tough as it looked on paper, and the Arizona State game was a little bit of a return to reality.
Yeah, but, you know, trying to be optimistic, and first of all, saying that the defense is better than last year is not really the ultimate compliment, because what were they were one of the three or four worst. But I guess there were three and outs. Certainly there were some lapses. They allowed the offense to get back in the game. So would we feel comfortable saying what we saw in Tempe, there were enough flashes to think with the new staff and everything taking root that they're headed in the right direction?
Well, hey, the defense did their job. Even though they gave up 37 points, I thought the defense did what they needed to do to win. They got the ball back to the offense twice at the end of the fourth quarter, and gave Oregon a chance to go win the game. I think that's all you can ask from Oregon's defense, at least this year, is just keep us in the game. Just compete. Just give us a chance at the end. The defense did that. I think the troubling thing is, where was the offense? You give Oregon two chances to go win the game at the end, you think that offense should go score every time. But something just was missing offensively. They did not run the ball the way they did in the first three games, which was the thing you thought would be the given with this team, that no matter what else happened, they'd be able to run the ball. Well, they couldn't run the ball. And Justin Herbert, I think he really missed Charles Nelson. They threw a lot of long passes that didn't connect. They got in a lot of third and long situations that they weren't able to convert. Just offensively, they were out of sync really a lot of the game, which is surprising because Arizona State is not a great defensive team. I really thought Oregon's offense would be able to be in business against Arizona State. It didn't happen, and I think that's a little troubling more than anything else from that game.
All right, let's wrap with this. I mean, it's also important to understand that the head coach has never been in this position yet. This is a Power 5 league, just lost his first game. And as we discussed all preseason, you know, do something, have fun, the optimism, the openness, got deserved praise. But he talked about handling adversity. What did you notice about him post-game, you know, how he handled it, and maybe what his immediate challenge is running this team?
I didn't notice anything really different with Willie Taggart after the game. He definitely was not, you know, he wasn't yelling at reporters. He wasn't visibly angry. Obviously, he was disappointed. I'm sure he was upset inside. But his demeanor publicly was about the same as it's been after their wins, which I think that's what you want to see. Look, nobody's going to panic because Oregon lost a game. Nobody expected this team to be, nobody expected this team to run the table. We knew that this was going to be a rebuilding year, that Oregon was going to have ups and downs. So I think this is part of what everybody expected from this team, and it's just a matter of, can they avoid what happened to last year's team where things started to go bad and then, boom, the wheels fell off? That's the challenge for Willie Taggart. Is you had everybody on board. Everybody was believing. After that non-conference schedule, it looked to me like pretty much total buy-in with the new staff. Well, it gets a little more challenging when you start to hit some adversity, when you lose a game, when you're not playing well. And so the challenge for Willie is going to be to keep everybody focused on the big picture and realize there's going to be some tough times this season. They are a rebuilding program, but if they just, you know, if they can keep it together, they have the ability to have a good season and do something they can build on.
And, of course, that all starts Saturday night. More Pac-12 After Dark with Cal to keep us all up late. He is Austin Meek of the Register Guard, at Austin Meek RG on Twitter. Austin, always a pleasure. Great stuff. Who knows what the heck lies ahead the rest of the week, but look forward to chatting you up on Press Row on Saturday.
Okay. See you there, Steve. Thanks.
Take it easy, Austin.